with headlines about generation wars. You know, the boomers versus the millennials. By the way, Gen Xers here. We're still here. Let's talk generations and this generation war. Is it actually a thing? Today, we learn more about generations. All right, thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More. This week, we are talking about generations, and I am joined by Bobby Duffy. He is a professor of public policy and director of the Policy Institute at King's College London. It's late in the day for you, so thank you for taking time out of your evening to join me today.
Well, not at all. Great to be here.
The reason why I've got you on is two reasons, actually. You've got a book out called The Generation Myth, Why When You're Born Matters Less Than You Think. And we'll get into that a little bit. But also, you I saw an article of yours, Boomers versus Millennials. Free yourself from the phony generation wars. And I just thought, I'm going to do a show on generation wars. And then I saw this article and I'm like, okay, well, wait, maybe I shouldn't do a show on generation wars. Okay. We believe that there's a generation war. Why do we believe that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, partly we believe it because we get told it a lot. It's a favorite theme in lots of media coverage. You'll see all sorts of things linked to a potential generation war, whether that's economics, that one generation has done better than the other and they're going to war over it, whether that's on culture change and a generational culture war, or whether it's on COVID. There was quite a lot of coverage at the beginning of the pandemic, expecting a generation war in the sense of young people rebelling against measures to control a virus that didn't really affect them and flouting any of the restrictions. And I think in some ways, the COVID experience is a good example where what actually happened in practice was incredible compliance from young people who suffered more from the economic and social effects of the restrictions on their lives in many ways, to look after older people, mostly to protect older people and vulnerable groups. So that kind of gives you an inkling of why us constantly talking up generational conflict or generational wars doesn't really ring true in the end.
So are you saying it's just like this is a marketing thing, or this is an us versus them thing? Like, you know, like,
It's interesting. I mean, it's kind of, first of all, there is a human element to it where older groups always think today's young people are the worst ever. I mean, this is a constant of history. You can take this back. There's quotes from Socrates in 400 BC saying that the young people of his day were the worst ever, effectively saying they lacked manners, showed disrespect for their elders, only love luxury. But you can go through every era and see the same sorts of points repeated where older people will think there's something uniquely wrong or weird about today's young people. And that's natural. That's kind of like a natural element of human development, is that culture change happens, social norms shift, technology shifts, all of these sorts of things move forward. And that evolution over time does put some distance and tension between young people and old people. There's a Canadian demographer from the 1950s who talked about it as a type of demographic metabolism, where it keeps us fresh, having new generations come in and that tension between young and old. So there's kind of a young and old tension built into human kind of development and progress. And that's a good thing. Without it, we would stagnate. In fact, you know, there's some of the big thinkers in generational change in philosophy and sociology, like Auguste Comte, talked about how we'd become a stagnant pond if we lived forever, because we need young people coming in and shaking things up effectively. That's what happens. So there's that element to it. But then I think there is also an element that's particular to our time, which is we have an information environment, social media, and media that is very competitive for clicks. And we know that more emotional, conflict-driven information attracts those clicks and views from people. And we know that emotional or angry language travels further and faster than more moderate language online and in our media. Mm-hmm. So we have got this context where we've got a different sort of information environment that encourages that type of discourse between people. And I think in some ways that kind of points to why millennials, because they were the young people coming through just as, they're no longer that young, but when they were young, they were coming through just as social media was taking off. So that's where you got loads of the memes about millennials killing everything from the napkin industry to the Olympics to diamonds to marriage to whatever you like. And that kind of very violent language is very, very kind of opposite of the time, really.
Yeah. Well, one of the things you hear is they're killing, marriage, right? Like they're not getting married, but then also like, if you think about it, there is this kind of like huge divorce rate amongst the boomers back in the 80s and, like things like that. Like, so is it just that, they're learning something different or just trying something different? Like, isn't it just, it's evolution, I guess.
Yeah, there's an element, definitely an element of that, because you're right that divorce rate's much lower, marriage age is much older, and that's partly, they're interrelated, those points. You are more established in your life and career, more established economically before you're getting married, and that is often one of the contributing factors to breakups. So yes, they are, it's much more of a, people in that sort of research area talk about marriage as a capstone on a relationship rather than a foundation stone on a relationship as it was in the old days, people taking longer in these types of things. So there is that aspect of it. But there are other things going on too, which are economic in some part, because one of the true generational differences is that it has been a worse economic environment for each successive younger generation, really, particularly the impact of the financial crash in 2008. But even then, before that, a lot of wage stagnation in the US and UK to some degree, those types of patterns of declining economic prospects did mean that things like millennials staying at home, living at home much longer than previous generations till they're older, was a real trend, was a real shift. And we're seeing that continuing with Gen Z.
Right. I saw a tweet the other day. Somebody posted, I'm a millennial. I live with my parents and have no plans of getting married. I have no plans of getting kids anytime soon. And why is that? It's not because I'm a millennial. It's because I can't afford rent. Yeah. my job pays minimum wage. Mm-hmm. And it's like exactly what you just said, like is what this tweet represented is inflation and wage stagnation and just the impossible housing market has made it where it's not that generation that's doing it's really it's like it's the conditions of the world that are putting that generation in that position.
Absolutely. No, that's so it's very true. And I think we can see that in the data and in the research about this is not there's a concept called emerging adulthood, which is by a social psychologist or a psychologist about how people are taking longer to grow up. And I prefer to call it delayed adulthood because emerging adulthood sounds like it's a time of exploration of yourself and you're kind of taking your time and things. But a lot of it is enforced on younger people. I think there is an element of, lifespans are longer. You're going to have maybe few directions in your career rather than a fairly linear life of post-war Western economies. But it's much more, I would say, to do with the constraints on people. This is not a lazy generation just sitting at home. Despite lots of the headlines around that in magazine articles, it is, when you look at it, it's much more enforced. It's not a choice. It's not not a lifestyle choice. It's an economic necessity for lots of these people. And there's a curious kind of double whammy. This is why I've got a lot of sympathy for millennials. I'm a Gen Xer, but I've got a lot of sympathy for millennials because not only have they had really hard circumstances, they also get this kind of victim blaming that goes on with it, where they are people giving them advice, financial advice about giving up fancy coffees or avocados in order to save up for a house, when it's got nothing to do with those types of things. They're actual consumption spending is much lower than previous generations because they're poorer in many ways. So the victim blaming is quite a trend for younger generations. And it's that is a cause of resentment, rightly a cause of resentment when you're getting advice from older generations who didn't get rich through really smart decisions by themselves. It was circumstances, economic circumstances were different with growth and house price growth, et cetera, et cetera.
But there's a book, Strauss and Howe have a book about generations, and it's been criticized by some because it's sort of, I guess in a way, it can be compared to looking at generations almost like looking at astrology.
I mean, it's a really enjoyable book, and there's, you know, several that Strauss and Howe have written, including one called Generations and then one called Fourth Turning, which is actually one of Steve Bannon's favorite books. And there was a reason for that. And that was that what the thesis is that there is this four repeating types of generational types, just as exactly as you say. So that, but every 80 years or so, there's a combination of generational types that comes together that points to inevitable crisis or decline or a fractious period for humanity or American society in particular.
Like the wars, the pandemic now or things like that, right?
Yeah. And I mean, but that's sort of a good example of why you have to be really cautious with these grand theories, because they did actually predict the Fourth Turning, which, you know, was published 20 plus years ago, I think, that there would be a crisis in around the 2010s or 2020s. And we have sort of had that. But the crisis was caused by a novel virus from the Wuhan district of China. It's not anything to do with the generational types that we have right now. So it kind of shows you the dangers and futility of doing these very long-term predictions are based purely on generational characteristics, summing up a whole generation in a particular type of character. And they're the things that I think are worrying about how generations are used. If you end up with saying, this is going to be a civic generation, or this is a particularly narcissistic generation, you just think about that really as, you know, do we really think the tens of millions of people that are in those cohorts can be summed up in that type of way? It just, it really, for me, it distracts from the really serious work of understanding generations, which is, it's to separate out three types of effects, effectively. That's all it is. You can either have period effects where something happens and we're all affected to some degree. So like a pandemic, we're all kind of affected. That's a classic period effect. You have life cycle effects where we change as we age or go through particular life stages of leaving home, getting a job, getting married, having kids, retiring. They kind of shift us along in fairly predictable paths in some ways. And then you have cohort effects where a generation is different from each other and stays different. And all the change that we see in society is a blend of those types of effects where one can be more dominant than the other. And just taking that example of the pandemic is very much a period effect. And it came along. This is what Taleb would call a black swan event, where you can't predict it at that necessarily exactly when it's going to happen. But then it has a huge impact on us, and that can shake things up and then shape futures in ways that you couldn't predict, and has got nothing to do with the generational types that are coming through. They can actually shape future generations, and I think COVID will shape future generations that are coming through now. But it just shows you, trying to summarize it in this very grand simple theory does become much more like a horoscope than analysis, and that's the risk. And I do worry about those types of things, because they become quite endemic in our thinking, that this generation has this type of characteristic, or we're heading towards an inevitable crisis. And going back to the Steve Bannon point, the reason he liked it is because it kind of showed that there was this inevitable crisis coming, and you may as well just get ready for the crisis rather than try to stop it. So it takes away our sense of agency. If you think there's this grand plan of four generational types that lead to inevitable crisis, then what does that leave for our own decision making or actions if that's just going to happen? And that's the bit that I worry about most, is quite a lot of the generational thinking ends up with, we've got these types, that's their character, there's nothing you can do about that. And that's not true from history. You know, proper reading of history shows that, you know, our decisions as whatever generation affect the future, mm-hmm. and we still have agency and control over that. So that's the main worry I have about those types of theories.
Well, I think it's just like, it's in many ways, it's human nature to kind of just look at this. Oh, well, we've got, you know, this data, let's kind of stereotype all of this into this, you know, or kind of make these kind of broad ways of just like, you know, looking at these groups and put everybody into these buckets, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like, okay, now we've got four buckets. Oh, these buckets are similar to those. But so, you know, I mean, it's human nature to do that. And then of course, the next step would be taking that into like, can we use this for, you know, predictive for the future? Yeah. But in kind of looking at generations, like, first of all, actually, I guess the bigger question here is, should we be looking at groups in these kind of generations? Like, do you feel like we should be doing that?
Yeah, and this is a really interesting current question in the US. There's an open letter from, I think it's 180 academics, saying that we should drop these types of categorizations. And I don't think we should drop them. I think we should keep generation analysis. Generational analysis is like a really big idea that you need to have some understanding of how different cohorts of people differ from each other to understand the future. I mean, it's just as simple as that, because the oldest generation are dying out and being replaced by a younger generation. So if there is something truly different between those generations, then that's really important to understand the future. I mm-hmm. mean, that's kind of just the, we're born, we live, we die in this repeated society-wide cycle. So you've got, it's based on something as fundamental as that. The problem is the stereotyping that goes alongside that actually hides a lot of the real differences. So the job in the book is to use that period cohort life cycle thing to separate the myths from reality. And what you see when you do that is there are some really big differences between generations that are real and you couldn't really see in any other way apart from looking at it like this. And that includes the economic aspects of, yes, there really has been a generation-on-generation decline, but it includes all sorts of other behaviors. We had, you know, a generational break in cigarette smoking that is not to do with people's age, but is to do with when they were born, because there's a whole cohort of people who've grown up now without cigarettes being in their day-to-day lives in the way that they were. Mm-hmm. And that was actually the strategy for the smoking cessation work was, it was to get people to quit who were smoking and stop older people starting. But it was mainly, let's just take this out of society as much as possible so that when you're going through your formative years, you don't grow up with that type of culture. Same with alcohol to a lesser degree. Really big generation on generation falls in alcohol consumption. Right. And so those sorts of these are very real things. There's been a big change in our sex lives as well, which is partly generation two. So lots of aspects of life touched by real generational effects. And then the trouble is we just waste our time with a whole load of stereotypes and cliches.
Right. Well, actually, okay. So we're going to take a short break here, but when we come back, I'm going to ask a question that might just be a stereotype. We'll see. I've also, man, when I scheduled this interview, I had a question that I was like, all right, this has got to happen. I'm going to ask that question as well. When we return, we'll take a short break and we'll be right back with more Learning More. If you enjoy history, maybe you're just feeling a little nostalgic, or you wonder who's having a birthday today, or maybe you need a reason to celebrate. Well, we've got the perfect podcast for you. It is called This Is Today. And each and every day, we talk about the historic events, celebrity birthdays. We also talk about whatever is going on today. There's always something to celebrate when you listen to This Is Today. And at just 10 minutes each day, you can make it a daily habit. You can even add it to your Alexa Flash briefing. Click the link in the description or just search in your favorite podcast app for This Is Today. Thanks for listening to Learning More. We're back with Bobby Duffy, professor of public policy and director of Policy Institute at King's College London. We're talking about generations, and we mentioned earlier that those younger generations, well, they're having less sex, which means there's less babies. The baby bust, is that stereotype or is that real?
Yeah, that's a real trend, and it's a long-term trend that the fertility rates are below the replacement levels in lots of countries, including US and UK. So we have got this issue of you want 2.1 children per female, and we're down at 1.7, 1.8, those sorts of levels. So it's kind of, but that has been around for a while. That is not a brand new thing. You see lots of headlines about blaming Gen Z for right. the baby bust. Gen Z for the baby bust. But they don't, it's been all of us having less sex and fewer children for a long time. But when you look at the baby bust itself, that is a long-term trend, but it does risk accelerating with Gen Z in particular, because they have had a particularly steep drop in sexual activity. And that's what we've actually seen with millennials is they were much less sexually active than Gen X at a young age than my generation in Gen X, but they sort of caught up. They were just doing things later. It's that delayed adulthood theme again. Right. They kind of caught up, but with Gen Z, it's such a big gap. It's hard to see them catching up fully with the levels of sexual activity and then baby rearing as well, eventually, as Gen X. So we've seen a little bit of it's a really good example of a blend of things going on where we have got definite period effects of everyone is having less sex, everyone is having fewer babies across the age ranges. But there's also this concentration among the younger cohorts of Gen Z where sexual activity is coming much later and is getting to the point where increasing numbers are not going into those types of relationships where it will end with babies. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a blend. Shouldn't blame Gen Z entirely, but there is something there about right. this being a generational break.
Well, you know, when you think about it, too, with life expectancy on the rise. Now, I know, you know, COVID's had kind of wreaked havoc on that a little bit. And, you know, like suicide, drug overdose, things like that have sort of made changes to life expectancy and brought that down a little bit. But for the most part, we're living longer than the previous generations always. Mm. Right. So when you think about it, when you go back to, oh, I don't know, you know, we'll go way back. You've got people getting married at, you know, 10 years old, 12 years old, having kids in their teens. And, you know, now with our life expectancy longer, wouldn't you expect that to be delayed anyway? Like just because of life expectancy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, all sorts of factors have driven that. Higher education levels, a big factor, contraception, ability to choose, you know, expectations mm-hmm. of women with their own careers, the role of women in society. So many changes have pushed in that direction. What you've got to be really clear about is you can't blame it on just one generation coming through now, unlike the headlines would say. These are very broad societal changes that have been underway for some time, and we're just catching the end of it now. And yes, longevity, increased longevity is definitely a part of that, story, as well as part of the problem, because it is, you know, unbalancing our populations significantly. But it's a bit off to the side of this, but one of the sadder trends in the US is that flattening off of increase in life expectancy and actually a slight decrease driven entirely by what is, again, a strongly generational element to this. It's, you know, as Angus Deaton and Anne Case have written a book called The Deaths of Despair, Deaths of Despair. And that shows how concentrated that decline in life expectancy is among white, non-graduate Americans. And that's really reflects part of that trend of stagnation among particular groups in economic stagnation among particular groups in the US that is very generational. We used to expect generation on generation increases in economic growth. We were kind of optimistic about our kids having a better future than us. And people have lost a lot of that, that the future is going to be better for their kids, particularly among those sorts of groups. So yeah, that is also a generational story in the sense of we deeply connected to wanting a better future for our kids. It's a real motivation for us. But for big parts of the population, that's no longer the case. And it leads to the sort of despair that you were talking about opioid deaths and suicide and alcohol abuse deaths, which they group together as deaths of despair. And it's very prevalent in the US. And we're seeing signs of it in the UK as well, too, earlier signs of it in the UK. So that's a big challenge.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. Okay, so we're running short on time here. But if I don't ask this question, it's I've got to do it. I've got to ask. You're Gen X as well.
Yes.
Why does it seem like Gen X is kind of always forgotten?
Yeah, because we are. I'm afraid,
right. Why is that?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's really interesting. We are we're talked about as the forgotten middle child.
Right.
In the generation.
Yeah, we're the Jan Brady.
Yes, exactly. We are. And that gives you a bit of a clue why, because I think you've got these kind of cultural and demographic behemoths of baby boomers and millennials who are like big cohorts and culturally very dominant in different sorts of ways, I guess, because of the sort of 60s and that kind of cultural revolution that came from that. And then the more digital social media driven revolution that we had with that millennials were kind of either at the forefront or in the firing line of, depending on how you look at it. And we didn't really have quite so much of that. We are smaller, and less attention has been lavished on us from those types of things. And we're also sort of a little bit of a bridge generation. I mean, I like being Gen X and looking at generations, because we can kind of see elements of both baby boomers and millennials in our experience. We didn't make it as rich as baby boomers, but we're not as poor as millennials. And culturally, we're closer to that kind of millennial mindset than the older baby boomers, at least in some of those types of cultural connections. So we're a very useful bridging generation between the two, but that doesn't make us very interesting for headlines anything else. We're kind of in the middle.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of funny when you watch, like, you're watching the news or something, they do some sort of report on generations and they just leave out Gen X entirely.
It happens.
Like, what? Come on.
Yeah, even in publicity for my book, they were kind of, it was quite a lot with just the blurbs would never mention Gen X.
Right.
You have to point out that that's actually one of the key themes. And we are a really interesting generation. I mean, like, we're in middle age now, and that is an interesting, being the middle generation in middle age, it's quite an interesting time. And it's because there are pretty clear, very clear evidence of a U-shaped happiness curve where it dips in these middle years. And so we are sort of like in that perfect spot. In fact, when I was writing the book, I was the work by Blanche Farrow and Oswald and people like that on happiness say that 48 is the most miserable age, and that's more or less exactly when I was writing the book, which kind of gives you which kind of explains my mindset during some of it.
But
the good news is it bounces back as we get older.
We'll
start to get happier again.
I actually did an entire podcast on that. It's in season one. I'll throw a link in the description if you're interested in learning more about the happiness curve. Okay, so let's talk about the data. If we are looking into generations, And we're trying to do some research on this. We're trying to learn more and go deeper on this topic. Where do we draw the line here between actual fact and stereotypes? Like, what should we be concerned about when looking at this data?
I suppose from my point of view, it's being wary of the motives. Why have we got this? But then the thing that I find most useful in my own kind of thinking about trends in society is just that little checklist of what type of effect from these three effects am I seeing here? Is this a period effect where everyone is being affected to some degree? Is it a life cycle effect? Am I one of the core drivers of generational myths is mixing up something that is explained by it purely being young people rather than a generational trait, that it's mm-hmm. just that's what young people do. So a classic would be about materialism. So quite a lot of headlines claiming this generation is the most materialistic ever or whatever. And when you look at the data, what it shows is actually each generation comes in when they're young, the most materialist, and then as they get older, they get a little bit less focused right. on things. And it just repeats over time for Gen X, for mm-hmm. millennials, for Gen Z, they each come in. So is this about how old the people are, or is it truly a cohort effect? And one of the biggest ones that I focus on a lot is views of climate change, which is really set up as a generational battle a lot in the coverage. So there's when Greta Thunberg was made Times Person of the Year in 2019, they called her an avatar in a generational battle between old and young. But when I look at the data on climate concern, there is a bit more concern among young people, but not much at all. It's a few percentage points.
Interesting.
And we're setting it up as a conflict between young and old, when actually older people are deeply worried, particularly now, about climate change and about the future of the planet for their kids and grandkids. And that's the last thing we want to do is create a fake division between young and old on climate when we need everyone to be motivated to act on it. So I think these stereotypes can be really important and destructive if you just accept them at face value. So I think challenging those types of things is actually, it's not just, these stereotypes are not just annoying or distracting or fun in lots of cases. Sometimes they can be things that we should really work on countering.
Right. And, you know, some of the stereotypes, it's just like, hey, well, why didn't we discover that? Like avocado toast. I mean, come on.
True. True. Well, we've sort of adopted it. We can learn from each other as well.
I hate to say it. It's just good. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Why didn't we come up with that? Oh, yeah. Bobby, thank you so much for joining me today and helping us learn more about generations.
No problem. Great to be here. Thank you.
And thank you for listening and subscribing to Learning More. We encourage you and thank you for rating this podcast and sharing it with your friends. As with any podcast that gives medical or legal opinion, the information is not meant to substitute professional advice, and we encourage you to consult a professional to discuss your exact needs. I invite you to check out our daily podcast. It's called This Is Today, where you can learn about the history of each day, including national events, daily history, and some fun stories. This Is Today is available wherever you get your podcasts. There's a link in the description. All right, we've got a new episode coming out next week on Learning More. And next time, we learn about Bitcoin and NFT. What the heck are these things? We should know this because we might be able to make some money, right? Check it out next week. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. I'm Russ, and I look forward to learning more with you next time.